How did you go from Amazon, 500 employees?
Selling on Amazon's hard, but running an agency is brutal. Every day you wake up trying to be an Amazon seller and it's a gauntlet. It's like gearing up to play Game of Thrones, except you don't know who's attacking you today. And then you run out of cash or you stock out. I mean, basically anything you could talk about in running a business, an Amazon seller faces that. If you are smart about it, if you are procedural about it, you're gonna make a lot of money along the way.
How do you survive Amazon?
Surviving on Amazon is...
Welcome to Surviving Amazon, the podcast that exposes the brutal truth behind selling on Amazon. Only the strongest survive. We bring you insider stories and strategies from experts and sellers who have been through it all, the ups, the downs, and the moments that made them question if it was all worth it. I'm Johnny Bradley, and today we're joined with Stephen Pope. He has battled his way through the chaos of selling on Amazon, and he's helped hundreds of brands do exactly the same thing through his agency, My Amazon Guy. They manage over $1.2 billion on Amazon, and of course, he's helped a ton of people, thousands more, with the thousands of pieces of content that he's been putting out across social media for absolutely years. So he's lived it, he's survived it, and he's here to share exactly how he does it. So Stephen, my first question is, how do you survive Amazon?
Well, thanks for having me on, Johnny, and congrats on your podcast launch.
Thank you.
Surviving on Amazon is really kind of like the only way you lose is to stop playing, right? And so like, that's the best business advice somebody can really understand, right? Like, you have to have a strong why, right? When Amazon on Black Friday last year yanked my Tumblr business, right? So I had all these cool, like, parody Tumblr cups from all kinds of different IPs. They just, like, Black Friday, they're like, F you, Stephen Pope, and you're gone, like, just toast. And then they revoked my brand registry and, you know, just a bunch of other stuff that I've gone through. And I've talked to thousands of Amazon sellers that have had similar experiences, right? You know, mine might be in the gray area. People, you know, in the comments will be like, oh, well, you can't rip off IP. I think I was in the legal fine because it's parody. Mm-hmm. But it's not black and white on this one. But other people who are in the white area experience the same thing. They wake up one day, their Amazon account's suspended, their bestseller listing is yanked. The Chinese have come in and left a one-star review, which is now ranking them in the adult category, which turned off their ads. I've seen all kinds of shit, right? Like, it's just every day you wake up trying to be an Amazon seller and it's a gauntlet, right? Like, you gotta go into that breach one more time. It's like gearing up to play Game of Thrones, except you don't know who's attacking you today and you don't know, you know, where you're going to find enough food to last the siege. And then you run out of cash or you stock out or you make a bad decision or you make the wrong hire. I mean, basically anything you could talk about in running a business, an Amazon seller faces that. So how do you survive as an Amazon seller? Well, tenacity and grit, right? Like, inject that into your veins every single day, because I can tell you right now, if you put on a suit, that ain't going to help you. If you go get an MBA, that most definitely is not going to help you survive being an Amazon seller. But tenacity and grit, that probably will help.
I totally feel that. Like, I had an issue, this was last year, pretty much kind of what you're echoing, right? One day we were launching a new brand and did this massive launch strategy going, right, we're going right up to the top. We're doing it using influencers, blah, blah, blah. Day three, down, IP complaint. And it was completely illegitimate. And it took, you know, 2-3 weeks to get back, by which point all of that work is completely, completely wasted. And you have to start again. And there's that moment of, is this worth it? Is this even worth the fight? Or if you don't know how to get around it, I don't know how to fight. And then if you were to give up, if you were to stop, if you go, oh, well, maybe they win, then everything stops, everything loses. And I think you're totally right. We've had a few people on, and, you know, asking this question is quite funny to hear very similar pieces of advice, right? One based around product and two around just doing it, like actually not giving up and doing it. And you've got to the point where, like, you've not only done it, this is one of the really, like, astounding things, I think. You've got around 500 employees. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get to a point? How do you get to a point from, I think you did, you know, you did some presenting prior and some other work. How did you go from Amazon, nothing, Amazon, 500 employees?
Well, I can tell you right now, there's probably very, very few Amazon brands that have 500 employees. Sure. But as an agency, I mean, that's my product, right? It's a people-based, service-based product. And I'm a good Amazon seller. I'm above average. You know, I've been selling on the platform for 12 years. I've helped all kinds of, I was on the corporate track in the marketing side. But as good of an Amazon seller as I am, I'm a significantly better agency owner. And I'll be honest, I wish that wasn't the case, mm-hmm. right? Like selling on Amazon's hard, but running an agency is brutal. Like just every single day, like the amount of stuff that I deal with as an agency is far more difficult than Amazon seller. Mm. But the thing that really, you know, helped me though is, you know, I'm a digital keyboard warrior and I can, you know, I can control my agency faster, bigger, better than I can the Amazon ecosystem. And the one thing I don't have against me as an agency is the Chinese mm-hmm. versus as an Amazon seller, the Chinese is this giant wild card and the fees are going up and the margins and issues. And you know, even if you patent your product, the Chinese still rip it off, mm-hmm. you know? And so you can do all this great work and then you have a short product life cycle. And then you start asking yourself the question, what's the point? But if you are smart about it, if you are procedural about it, or if you avoid the common pitfalls, you know, you're going to make a lot of money along the way. Are you going to have to keep launching products every year? Absolutely. It's bar none. That's really super important. You got to continually be innovating because just simply going up and launching, you know, a marshmallow stick that's 12 inches longer, that might work one year, but the next year, everybody and their dogs is going to have 12 inch longer marshmallow stick with you. Mm-hmm. And so you got to keep that innovation going. But for me, my Amazon brand probably topped out around, you know, 14 employees, including warehouse, you know, staff to run it, you know, everything from, you know, SEO and PPC and merchandising design and then all the logistics pieces and the sourcing elements. And we actually tried to manufacture quite a bit in the Carolinas. And we invented a new way to make holsters for guns. And that was cool. And then nobody bought them. So I was like, well, frick, that was nice. and so we did better with the tumblers. We did really good with soaps and artisan soaps. And, you know, we cut them ourselves. We packaged them ourselves. They're made in America. I was really trying to find a way to cut the Chinese out. Like, I really have a beef with the Chinese culture and the bribery and the time zone and all of the challenges that you experience. But when I made the agency, there were so many people that I helped so quickly and I was able to double sales in days, not even weeks in some instances, and help people get their accounts back and help do all these various different things. And I put out a bunch of content and, you know, you're starting your content journey and a lot, man, mad respect for you because it's not freaking easy. It's a lot of work. But along the way, you know, when that success started to happen for me, I was able to double down and triple down very quickly. I hired a bunch of staff. I discovered how to hire remotely with virtual assistants and Filipinos. And that's very difficult, by the way. You know, if you're a solopreneur, it can be a whole full-time job to try and go crack that, which is why often people will hire an agency. It's not that much more expensive. And I'm biased to say that, obviously, but like, there's a lot of things that a seller can do to cope with these challenges, whether it's join a Facebook group, whether it's listen to the podcast to get them through their day, mm-hmm. Or hire staff internally and try and build a system, or hire an agency or outsource and all these different things. And every different person is going to have, you know, a different opinion on that or a different advantage or disadvantage. And you got to choose for yourself what's best for you. But I think, you know, ultimately, hiring lots of people was beneficial for me as an agency because that's how I survived.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess through doing that as well, you crowdsource. I mean, yes, it's nice to know that you crowdsource success habits. This works with this brand and this brand's doing something cool and we can maybe implement that into another brand. But I think maybe the real critical area is you can crowdsource fuck ups, right? And mistakes. Do you think because you've been able to grow and, you know, deal with, you know, a huge number of brands, that's really the long-term advantage of just being able to see the writing on the wall or see around the corner?
So the thing about small and medium-sized businesses is they don't think in terms of mistake avoidance. They only think in terms of cash flow and growth. And so you're right. Hiring an agency avoids a lot of fuck-ups, and like $10,000 here can devastate a cash flow business. You know, you don't do an inspection in China and then all of a sudden your entire load is toast. Mm-hmm. Or you went with the cheap guys for a particular logistics shipment and all of a sudden their boat sunk. Like I've seen every story. I've seen every experience. And so I do know the common things to avoid and how to even just simply label the FN SKU on a, you know, a cylinder object. You have to go vertical versus horizontal. You know, small things like that, they add up and can make a big difference. I've also had to pass the pesticides test for over 100 accounts. Not a single one of them sold pesticides. You know, the first time I took it was for a tweezer company and I was pulling my hair out. I had hair back then. I actually just got a hair transplant over in Istanbul, Turkey. So you see my hair is kind of growing in. It look a little red.
But I'm 1 year in. I've had one.
Dude, congrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking good, man. And you know, I just got back from, I went to Japan and then I did Thailand. I was hiking all over and I, you know, did the Istanbul, Turkey, you know, thing on the way back. Did you do yours locally or did travel tour?
Yeah, I went to Turkey, had a holiday, made it worthwhile, and then just stopped in Istanbul on the way back.
Epic. And so, you know, it's looking good for yourself. I'm sure you're pretty happy about it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But like, you know, these are the challenges that people face as an Amazon seller, and it's a lot to take in.
Mm. Well, I started back in 2017, and we've got the Seller Pro Academy, and mainly based in the UK, we've helped hundreds, thousands of sellers, right? Often there's the misconception or there's the idea that this is where my problem is, PPC, advertising, but actually the problem is elsewhere, right? Why do you think it is that so many sellers struggle with advertising?
Well, I mean, I think that's an interesting metaphor to dive into. So imagine you're a doctor and somebody comes into your doctor's office and you, before you even say anything, you can tell their left arm is broken, but they start talking about how they want help with their right ear. Mm-hmm. And they go on and on about how they have an earache, and you look at them, you inspect the ear first because that's what they wanted to talk about, and you notice it's just a little wax removal. But you're like, how did you like focus in on this when your left arm is broken? You can't even lift an object, and I think this happens all the time to Amazon sellers, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes, you know, PPC is obviously the easiest thing to outsource. It's obviously the fastest way to grow an account outside of click through rate and improving a main image. And spend more to make more, right? Pay to play, et cetera. But advertising is, you know, a sophisticated moving target, with bid changes, with targeting methodologies, Amazon switching how the ads display or where they display. And, but here's a fun fact. Amazon makes more money on Amazon advertising than they do all of AWS. Mm. And that started back in 2023. And so once you understand that, you realize that, like, wow, Amazon ads is a behemoth. It's gigantic. It dwarfs any other product-based advertising in, you know, the Western hemisphere. It's just an insane stat. And so, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to get better at PPC. You can take the course. You can work on more than one account. What works on one account may or may not translate to another account. You could do day parting and try and schedule in higher bid modifiers. You could learn bulk sheets and learn how to make bulk changes to the account, depending on how sophisticated the account is. And I'd say probably around, you know, $15,000, $20,000 in ad spend a month is when I would really, really hit bulk sheets, you know, starting right around there. Then there's this thing called DSP, which I wouldn't hit until about $50,000 in ad spend a month. And there's just so many different platforms, and then you get, and then you're like, well, what if I launch over in Germany? What if I launch over in Canada? And then you start seeing that, wow, Japan is actually gigantuan. Mm. Let's go crack Japan next. And so like you get distracted by all these different opportunities. And so a lot of times what I tell people is like, hey, you got to really focus on one thing. And you, until you hit diminishing returns, ignore all of the noise, right? You got to really, really hit this one country typically, all in until you're static for 12 months. Once you're static for 12 months, I'd say, yeah, you need to go do something else or launch a new product. But those are the basic things that we typically see on ads. And I'll throw two more out there. The number one mistake I see advertisers make is to not launch broad match campaigns. They're all in on exact match. They're paying 20% higher on ACoS because of it. And the second thing is the negations, right? Like people need to go in and add weekly negations. If you're not doing that, you're literally pissing money away for no reason, right? Because like it could be a 5-minute change and it will save you hundreds and hundreds of dollars every week just by adding negations.
Is that something where you look at, hey, it's 10 clicks or 7 clicks or 12 clicks? Are you looking at, hey, what's our conversion rate? And we're basing it off that. Or is there just a general rule of thumb that the average seller can go, right, if it's above 10 clicks, no sales, let's ditch it?
Everybody's going to have a different threshold, but in general, a pretty safe one, 20 clicks, no sales, 20 clicks, ACoS, that's 50% higher than your goal. Those are pretty standard, you know, things that like pretty easy to say, like in more than 80% of the cases that will uphold, will be fine. But there are, you know, a lot of extrapolations you have to make during this process. So the less money you spend on ads, the more extrapolating you have to do. So for example, if I was advertising for tumblers and I saw the term wine show up, but I didn't have a single wine keyword with more than 20 clicks. But when I go to the search term report and I type the word wine in and I see that there's 73 different search terms with the term wine in it, and I have zero sales and hundreds of clicks, it might be a pretty good idea to do a phrase match negation on the term wine, right? And you can see this all the time in beginner accounts where they're throwing hundreds of dollars away in unextrapolated negations. And so often the case, you know, hiring somebody to run PPC, they'll pay for themselves in the first 30 days just in cost savings alone.
Just from the negative spend, just reducing negative spends.
Just reducing wasted ad spend. And that's usually a really good justification. But on the flip side, they also tend to double and triple the sales, you know, frequently by going in and adding new campaigns. So I'll give you one tip. You know, anybody can replicate this. Go to the search query performance report. I call it the ICAP marketing funnel, impressions, clicks, add to carts, purchases, ICAP, ICAP marketing funnel. And if you look at the keyword data, they give you the data of your own keywords for each one of these levers. And so a lot of times people forget that if you have a really high click-through rate, but low impressions, the easiest thing to do to fix that is to spend more money on ads. And sometimes you may not even have an ad up for a keyword that you have the highest click-through rate in the category on, and it blows my mind. I see this every day. And the nice thing about the Search Query Performance Report, when you use the ICAP marketing funnel, is it becomes very obvious what to go do. It's binary. It's like, you know, Amazon sellers have 1,000 things they can do to go survive, right? But in reality, there's only like one or two things they can get to on a daily basis. And just like if you were in a zombie apocalypse trying to look for water and shelter and avoid getting bitten, those are the three activities that you're doing every damn day, right? Oh, yeah. And as an Amazon seller, what are those two or three zombie apocalypse survival tactics? And it's pretty easy. You know, you're trying to increase your growth and make more money and profits, right? Okay, well, if you break that down a little bit more, what does that look like? Well, it's going to be PPC, SEO, and CTR on the traffic generated side. And then on the conversion side, it's going to be merchandising and design work and catalog work. And those are the things that you should be doing every single day. And they're very boring. They're monotonous. They're systematic. They're scalable. And oftentimes, you know, I've built thousands of SOPs, standard operating procedures. And sometimes I'll get a question from a super advanced seller who maybe obtained one of my SOPs. And they're like, why is this so basic? And I said, because it freaking works. Because you don't have to hire a 100K salary, six-figure dude to run your account. You give them this SOP and you can hire the $4 or $5 Filipino virtual assistant and they can execute this and not even have to ask you questions, right? And so these are the basics. You know, you can run this as an advertising strategy. Stop trying to do all the latest hacks and sophisticated things. Just make a checklist or use a checklist you can find online for the things you should be doing, and then follow the checklist and then literally check them off every time you're supposed to, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly. And if you follow checklists, it's going to get boring. It's going to get monotonous. But that's the tenacity. That's the grit. That's how you survive selling on Amazon.
That's two things I wanted to talk about there. Because one of my questions was, is there a magic PPC hack or is that marketing bullshit? Right? And I think you
both, yes.
But
yeah, I think it's both, right? Yeah. Like if you go into an account that spends $20,000 a month and they haven't added a negation in the last 30 days, and then I told you I could come in and save you $1,000 a month, that would seem like a hack, right? But it's also super basic, right? It's not really a hack. It's just a checklist item you're not doing.
Yeah.
So if people are looking for a hack, I guarantee you there is something basic I could say that would seem like a hack to most people. But in reality, it's just a checklist item.
Sure. Because I think what I see from sellers going through their journey, you know, escalating up the like financial ladder or the number of SKUs or whatever, they get quite a lot of the time caught in the weeds of creation, creating my product, creating my marketing, making sure that that's the fun part. And then when it comes down to operational excellence and, you know, doing the things every day and the consistency of that, that's often where it's not hard. It's tedious. It's laborious. It's annoying. I don't like looking at spreadsheets. I'd rather look at logos and branding and, you know, think about all these nice pie in the sky ideas rather than going through a search query performance report or looking at my keyword rankings or PPC report. But it's like saying, well, which is more important, but they are symbiotic. You can't have one without the other, right? And I think, you know, quite often I see, this is a real good question to ask is there a point within like the product's life cycle, if it's 3 months, 6 months, a year down the line, where if you don't do this stuff, you'll end up seeing a slow, horrible decline? Do you see that in accounts where people come to you?
I mean, it's a guaranteed thing, right? You know, pre-Amazon, if you asked what a product life cycle was, you'd probably hear something like 5 years. Along comes Amazon, then it became 2 years. And in 2024, as we enter 2025, the product life cycle is closer to a year now, right? Like the ability for the global community to look at the spreadsheet and then mimic the products and recreate it and then somehow get half of the branding correct as well and then undercut you in price. It's just really easy these days. And so there's a lot of things you can do to defend against that, but it's nothing is defensible fully. Right? Like you'll build the castle, you'll put up the moat and the drawbridge, and you'll still have invaders hitting you from like drilling underneath the moat and then coming up through the floorboards. Like it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, you should always be launching products to cope with that. But at the same time, if you do certain key elements on your products, you know, packaging, if you make it look American made, if you make it American owned, at the very least showing the American flag, if you're selling in the States, if it's in the UK, same thing, right? People would rather buy local. They'd rather support it. They don't want to pay more for it, but if everything else was equal, they're going to pick the, you know, the local flag versus the Chineseium. And so the marketing is very beneficial on this front, right? If you like, the one thing the Chinese aren't as good at is photo shoots. They're really good at Photoshop, but they're not good at photo shoots. Video, getting a Billy Mays character or influencer set up, right? Coming in and sham wowing it, right? Like trying to show you how to use the product and as made for TV type elements. And then telling the story, like what's the why behind the product? What's the why behind the customer avatar? And I think the Chinese don't understand customer avatars very well. They understand make cheap products, make good sales, right? Like that's like ingrained in their culture, penny wise, pound foolish, if you will. But what I think, you know, people do really well in America and often in Europe as well is to understand that this particular customer set can be very narrowed. So I'll give you a couple examples. One is from Dan Kennedy, and he says, you know, if somebody was going to order a mail order bride, who would be the customer target? And I always hear funny examples on this. I won't put you on the spot, but like 3-time divorced truck drivers is the key answer, right? And once you understand, obviously 3-time divorced truck drivers, they don't have time for hygiene. They don't have time for travel. They don't relationships. they just want a woman to show up, and they may not even be that great at, you know, whatever. And so that customer avatar, once you label it, it becomes super abundant how to market to them, how to build the creative around it, et cetera. But often what happens is, and I'll see this every day on Amazon, is somebody will come with a product idea. Let's say it's a pet treat, and they're going to try and sell that pet treat to both cats and dogs. So what do they do in the designs? They show both cats and dogs. Well, if you look at the real data and you look at the ICP and the ideal customer profile, most people don't own both a cat and a dog. They own one or the other. And nobody wants to feed their precious dog a cat treat. And nobody wants to feed their precious cat a dog treat. Sure. And you'd actually double your sales by splitting these in half, sell the exact same product, but package it two ways. And you got a cat treat and a dog treat now. But on the cat product, you only show cats. And on the dog product, you only show dogs. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, sales go up and your ICP is clear. And so this lesson, I think, is something that a lot of sellers don't comprehend when they first start selling. They're like, I want as many customers as possible. Well, you do, but in politics, you're trying to get as many people under your tent and you're like, give me all the votes, right? But in marketing, the opposite is true. You want to be pushing away as many people as you pull towards you. Case in point, if you look at my social media presence, I come across as an asshole to other communities in the selling community, right? Like, and I tell people to their face, they're wrong on certain subjects, how things actually work on Amazon. I don't play nice at all. And it pushes away a segment of the customer set. It pushes away some Amazon sellers, and it also pushes away a lot of competing agencies or affiliates and whatnot. Like, I don't get a lot of invites to go speak at conferences and I don't give a shit, right? But like, I can tell you right now, I have one of the strongest cult followings in the world about Amazon selling. And it's because I push away the people I don't want to associate with, and I pull towards me like-minded individuals. Mm-hmm. The same can be applied to any Amazon product. When you pull only the key element of that ICP, and I'm not talking just demographics, I'm not just talking male, female, or age, I'm talking three-time divorced truck drivers. Mm-hmm. And when you understand that and you speak to them incessantly, you're going to win big.
I've got a really good example for this as well that I was told by a guy called Netza Topaz. And it's one of the brands that he was running, I believe. And it was Whiskey Stones, right? So, you know, these, the, you cool them down, they go in whiskey glasses. And he was like, who buys these? And you know, well, who's it for? And people go, oh, you know, it's for men and it's for, you know, dads. And it's not. Those aren't the buyers. The people that buy those products, no one buys them for themselves, ever. It's not something that you buy for yourself because no one actually wants it. It's something that someone buys their dad or their partner or their brother-in-law who they have no idea what to get them. And they're like, oh, I saw them drinking whiskey once, so I'm going to get them that. So if you...
They type into Amazon whiskey gift.
Yes.
And then the whiskey stone show at the top.
Exactly. But if you look at the market size for whiskey stones, it might be, I don't know, 1 million a year or a month. I don't know, whatever it is. But the market size for gifts for men, gifts for dads, is obviously in the hundreds of millions. And only once you attend to that customer can you actually market to them, and that's exactly what you're saying. But I think now that's ever more important. With the last year, what we've seen with how Amazon are moving with, you know, the recognition, Comprehend, Cosmo, you know, Rufus, all of this stuff that's telling us, hey, the more relevant you are, not just from an SEO perspective, but from a marketing perspective, image perspective, the better it's going to be for you to find customers. Are you finding that, like, boots on the ground? Are you seeing that happen already?
All the time. And I'll give you one more example. If you have a product that does well with a particular keyword, if you add that keyword to the main image, it will do even better. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, because you're showing and telling the product at the same time. And we could look at any product ever. I happen to have an antifungal balm on my desk here. I've been taking testosterone. I've been working out. I've been getting jock's itch. Won't give you the details. But like, when you start doing physical fitness, this stuff happens. So right here on the label, we can see antifungal balm. And it's super easy to read. And I'll put it up to the camera for those that are watching the videos. And in here, this is a great case example of a strong keyword that demonstrates the product. Now, This Wonder Balm also has ingredients on it, like tea tree, coconut, avocado, lavender, eucalyptus, etc. And if we were going to build the rest of this main image, we would also demonstrate those ingredients behind the product, mm-hmm. show the raw ingredients, not some made up, you know, cartoon element of it, but like the actual ingredients. And what this does is it shows and tells the product fast. And so somebody who's looking for something to smell like avocado or tea tree, they're going to zone in on this before they even realize they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to click on it. And so adding a keyword, adding these elements to the main image is a great case example of how to attract the customer correctly, quickly, because we live in a TikTok nation, a TikTok world even, and people are making judgment calls in 2 seconds before they swipe right or scroll down. And so you have to really be present and give the customer what they want, right? Like, which, by the way, is the best business advice I could ever give. If you want to make more money in business, simply do these three things. One, ask the customer, what do you want? And by the way, if you get really good at this, instead of asking the customer what you want, mind read them and give them what they want before they ask. The second is give them what they want, mm-hmm. right? If you give customers what they want, like Steve Jobs did with Apple, right? And by the way, I think he was on the advanced side where he gave people what they want before they asked. He mind read them. You're going to crush it with their product line, like no question. And then the third is ask the customer, did you get what you wanted, right? And like you could read thousands of business books and come up with all kinds of theories of what you should do in business and whatnot. You could literally also just ignore all the business books and just do these three basic things. Give customers what they want, you know, ask them if they got what they wanted and keep doing it and give it to them, right? Like do that over and over again, you're going to make $1 million, like easily, super easily. And the rest is just about the vehicle and the market size.
It'll be interesting to know how you practically do that, because what we've been doing, I guess, for the last 6 months or so, maybe a little bit longer with tools that have now been more available, is like previously on Amazon, hey, I want to know what the customer thinks. Where do I go? I look at SEO and I look at reviews. And that was really the only real place where we had on Amazon to get that data, other than going and doing your own research. But now we've been using tools like Product Pinion, and then there's another one called IntelliVive, and I'm sure there's others, you know, there's parts of Helium and that do it, blah, blah, blah. And asking customers, hey, this one or this one, or emulating the search environment, which one would you click on and why? Is there any other things that you guys do or advise to get that data pre-purchase?
So yes, the pre-step to this is to stick to what you understand. Right. So a lot of people, when they try and start selling on Amazon, they'll install some sort of seller tool, Jungle Scout, Helium 10, some sourcing tool, whatever. And they go down and they're like, oh, what's in demand? What's trending? And then they go and launch that product. Well, it turns out it was a fidget spinner. And then everybody and their dogs bought a pallet load or even a construction load of fidget spinners. And now they're screwed because they followed the data. Isn't that interesting that in our data age, following the data gets you in more trouble than not? And so what I recommend instead is sticking to what you know and understand. So for example, I'm on this fitness journey. I bought these things that help me with pushups. They're like the foam things you put your hands on and then you can like go down farther and stuff. It's really cool, actually. Like I know a lot about fitness right now that I didn't know a year ago. I am now the ICP of fitness training and, you know, fat guy becoming a fit swole guy, you know, fitness training dude, right? In ICP. And so if I wanted to launch a fitness product right now, I could literally do before and after shots with myself. I could literally be the testimonials. I could literally sell the product to myself and I would know what I would want, right? So when you're doing customer research, one of the easiest things to do is just literally be your customer. Give your own self what you want. Now, if you're a man selling a beauty product to women, obviously that's out. Right. Obviously, you're going to have to do different types of research. But I think that precursor methodology, if you're trying to debate between whether to sell to yourself or to sell to somebody else, if you sell to yourself, you're going to be better at it. Oh, right. Totally. You just are.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Really agree.
Unless you're crazy. But after you do that, then you can run the testing. Then you can validate it with data. Then you can go to those tools and find out, okay, did I make a good selection? You know, Whiskey Stones does 200K a month on Amazon. Is that the right thing to do? Or should I launch something that's different for men's gifts? What else ranks for men's gifts? Let me do a couple of extra searches and validate. And then after that, you buy all the products, you buy the top 10 competitors, and you ship that to your house, and you touch them all, and you're like, yeah, I can't make anything better than this. This is a terrible idea. Or you touch them all, and you're like, frick, I could beat all of these guys. Mm. And then you go to China or wherever, and then you grab some samples. And most of them are going to suck, and then you're going to have to tweak it, maybe even buy, you know, some sort of mold to upgrade and make it better. And then you get that year or two of product life cycle at best, and then you launch your product and do well because you did all these steps correct. You stuck to what you knew and understood. You then used data to validate. You did the product research. You bought all the competitor stuff, and then you sourced it and made the improvement. And that's like what I think the winning equation looks like. Mm.
I think that definitely comes, I feel, with more experience, right? Whereby you've done it a few times, you've been through the process, you've seen around the corner, and then it's quite easy to see those opportunities. So like, for example, a few weeks ago, I was trying to get this, it's a supplement. I'm not going to say exactly what it is because I'm doing it right now. And I was really annoyed that I wasn't getting the answers that I wanted to answering to be able to buy the products. I was like, I know what I want because this is the standard, but I can't find that well on Amazon or any other place. And it ate at me for a little bit of time. And I was like, I could just do it. Maybe I'll just do it. And even if I just do it for myself and I just have a year's worth of supply sitting in my cupboard and that's it. And I thought, do you know what? Actually, let me research this a bit further. Here's a gap in the market. Here's where customers aren't being attended to correctly. Here's a marketing opportunity. All right, cool. What's the cost to test this out? The cost actually isn't that much. Let's test it. Let's do it. So, and that's happening at the moment from idea to the point where we should be able to sell a few products is only a very short space of time. If it doesn't work, oh well, it doesn't work. But if it does, the reason it's worked is because of that personal experience and going, I see an opportunity. But the reason why you can see an opportunity is you've been through the process before and you know it's actually not as hard as what people think it is to create a product. Would you think that's fair enough or would you kind of disagree?
I think it's incredibly hard to make a product. and that's the thing. I'm a marketer, right? Like, you might be an engineer, you might be a chemist, and you might be a creator. I am not that guy. And that's why I'm a better agency owner than I am an Amazon brand owner. Mm-hmm. And that's why I chose to sell commodity items like tumblers and soaps, right? Because I wasn't a creator. I was like, I'll just outmarket the next guy. That was what made me successful. And that made me an above average seller, but it never made me $10 million selling on Amazon. Whereas the agency that I run is $20 million a year. And so I think that people who want to succeed have to truly be in touch with themselves to know where their skill sets are. Because if you are a creator, chances are you're probably a terrible marketer. Mm-hmm. Chances are you may not be as good at operations, right? One of those three things you have to be really good at. You have to, you know, creative genius, but those engineers that own all the patents, they never launch their shit. Like, they just sit on them, right? They're really great creators, but they suck at the other two things, right? So when I meet people who are really good creators and have the ops down, and then I come in and, you know, fill in marketing, that's like, oh man, that is just like the perfect marriage. And then we're having lots of babies together and everybody's happy.
So you would say definitely having the awareness of yourself. Like, for example, me, I like creation, marketing. Those are my things that I really like doing. I hate operations, right? I hate logistics. It's not, you know, we have an operations director for that sort of stuff. So I don't even have to think about it. I don't have to deal with it. I don't have to deal with logistics. Fantastic. If I don't have to think about it another day in my life, I'm happy with that. Hero images, I could talk about all day long. You know, we could talk about the how to get someone to click. I love that stuff. But to other people, it's boring. It might be like, well, what's the benefit of this? I can't get into it. I'm not interested in it. So I think, yeah, in knowing yourself of what actually will get you to do the work every day and what work it is that you need to be doing, I think is a really good piece of advice. I want to play a game if possible.
Let's do it.
Right. So
this is gamify everything.
Yes, this is it. I think audio, we probably want some like some sort of like darken the lights. So basically, I'm just going to ask you
deal or no.
Yeah, deal. Exactly. This or that. And each time you choose one thing, that's going to then go into this or that for the next thing. At the end, we should have the top trumps of what is the most important thing out of the things I've listed. Okay. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
ACOS or TACOS?
ACOS.
ACOS or reviews?
ACOS.
ACOS or pricing?
Pricing.
Pricing or traffic?
Ooh, that one's tough. Boy, I'm that one's hard, man. Pricing, I guess, just because that one's gonna generate traffic.
Okay, good idea. Yeah. Pricing or conversion?
Pricing.
Pricing or coupons?
Pricing.
Pricing or bestseller?
Bestseller badge?
Yes.
Yeah, bestseller badge might be pricing.
Bestseller or hero image?
Bestseller badge is gonna be probably anything else you say.
Yeah. Bestseller or Amazon's choice?
Oh, easy. Yeah, bestseller badge.
Bestseller or title?
Yep, bestseller.
Bestseller or A-plus content?
Bestseller, dude, it's gonna trump okay, everything. That's like the god token.
Okay, absolutely, that's definitely the thing that we're all striving for, right? Sometimes it does put a target on your back, and that target you can get shot at quite a lot. But what is maybe the thing that you would do, that one lever that you would pull if you wanted that bestseller and you're a seller that's nearly there, you're like three, ranked third, fifth for those keywords? What do I do to get to that point where I have the holy grail bestseller badge?
All right, three tips. One, lower your price as much as you humanly possibly can, but you don't have to do this permanently. It's actually a strategy. It's not a promotion. Okay, you need sales to get sales. So tip one is lower the price and then generate the momentum in the BSR, which will lift the rankings and will get you to the best. So that's the easiest tip. Mm-hmm. The second is to fix the click-through rate. Right. So if the bestseller doesn't have a keyword on it, if the bestseller doesn't have the ingredients or the elements of the product behind it, or it's missing accessories, you add those to your main image, you're going to go up a slot. And the third is advertise way more than you think you need to. And the fastest way to grow sales is to simply double the amount of campaigns on your account, which is a lot of work. And you're going to piss away a lot of money. So that's why step one and two are easier and more cost effective. It's actually more cost effective to just simply lower your price than it is to go mess with your PPC. But most people ignore it because they're like, perception. I've got a higher quality product. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. You're selling on Amazon. Everything is a commodity. Brands don't exist. When was the last time? What was the last? This will be fun. I'll ask you one question if that's all right, John. Yeah, yeah. What was the last item you bought on Amazon?
Oh, probably a week or so ago.
What was it?
It was a heater.
Okay. What was the name of the brand?
Fuck knows. No idea.
Exactly. No idea. Every item on Amazon is a commodity. Branding doesn't matter. So embrace that, showcase that in your main image, and give customers what they want. And that's how you're going to get to that bestseller badge.
Amazing. Now, one more question, or two more questions, actually. You mentioned like pricing. You actually mentioned this a lot earlier as well about like pricing strategies. And I think this is very interesting because years ago, we didn't have all the cool tools we have with like these coupons with the red badges and, you know, all of these different options available. You could be a lot more crazy with the pricing. You can go up, you can go down, do deep discounts. We are limited now. From a seller that is, you know, they're existing, they're doing well, they want to go for bestseller, they want to look for the big Prime Day deals, all that sort of stuff. Would you say that they need to be running different pricing strategies basically every week, every month, or for certain events that they want to try and go for?
There is no wrong answer to this question, in my opinion, but here's what I will speak to. I'm going to speak to the guy who hasn't updated his pricing in 90 days. If you don't update your pricing at least once every 90 days, you are leaving sales on the table. So I have a whole pricing guide at myamazonguy.com/price. And on there, I show use cases and studies where I had an item that I was selling, you know, for 2 years, it was a Tumblr Mr. and Mr. Bride or something like that. And all I did was lower the price by $10. And I sold 500 units in a week or two. And I accidentally forgot to raise the price back up and I sold out of the item. Mm-hmm. Then when I got back in stock, I was selling hundreds of units and I raised it back to full price. I didn't do anything else. I didn't update the ads. I didn't update the main image, nothing. All I did was update the pricing. I forgot about it. And then went back and fixed the pricing and restocked it. And then I had a bestseller again. Mm. So like structurally speaking, pricing is that important. And the ability to grow your sales and go about it. Amazon's an algorithm that rewards sales. Get sales to get more sales.
Absolutely amazing. And what's the best way to reach out to you, your team? What's the best platform? Should anyone want to learn more about your work with you?
I've got 2,500 videos on YouTube. Come subscribe over there and check us out. I relentlessly post 3 times a day on LinkedIn. I'm a LinkedIn lunatic. I've been viral on Reddit on the LinkedIn lunatic thread as well for saying crazy shit. And I meant every moment of that. And it's been a really fun thing to engage with everybody. If you guys want to drop me an email and say, hey, I saw you on Johnny's podcast, send me an email to podcast@myamazonguy.com. I do read every single one of those. I'll forward it over to Johnny and be like, hey, somebody saw us. You got a fan. It'll be lots of fun. So the last thing I'll mention here in our community is it's not me against you, other Amazon agency or other Amazon seller. It's all of us versus Amazon. So that's why I share all my trades.
Yeah, exactly. It's like working with them, but also kind of against them because they're always taking.
No, fully against them. Fully against them.
Thanks again, Stephen, for helping us survive Amazon. Now, if you've liked this episode and found it helpful, please do share it with other sellers. Subscribe, comment if you're watching it on YouTube or anywhere like that, so we can help other sellers survive on Amazon. Thanks again, Stephen, and see everyone soon.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.